OCD people and also those who are suffering from waswas. And we came to the point where we discussed those people who have problem with purity and impurity of every single thing, whatever they do, the supplications they are going to make, they are very unsure about whether they have done it right or wrong. They change it many times, they redo it on and on. So we, Brother Karimi actually gave us some advices, and now we're going to complete that. So, Brother Karimi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yeah, we mentioned some practical ways, and lastly, we were talking about ignoring such doubts when it comes to purity and impurity, making ablution, saying the prayer, and the fact that according to the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt, when it comes to wudu and salat, ablution and prayer, from the third doubt onwards, we need to ignore the doubt, which means that, as we mentioned, your prayer is accepted by God with all those doubts, with all those deficiencies that you think are in your ablution. Your prayer is accepted by God from the third doubt onwards. You need to ignore the doubt. Your prayer is accepted, and we do not need more.
God is satisfied,
with that. So going along the same line, it's been mentioned by the scholars that, let me also share one story from Ayatollah Burujadir rahmatullah alayhi. He says that in Isfahan, I was studying with Ayatollah Mirza Abul Mahali Kalbasi, and I had told him that sometimes when it is the time for prayer, I have some doubt whether it is the time for prayer or I need to wait for a couple of minutes, for example. And I somehow was suffering from waswas when it regarding the time for the prayer. Once we were in the Mosque of Hakim, and then there was the call for prayer, and the Ayatollah told me that Agha Hussein, addressing Ayatollah Burjadi, they are saying the Adhan, just stand up and say the prayer. Ayatollah Burjadi says that I tried to wait as if I did not hear him. So it means that how difficult it is for people suffering from that to get rid of that. But then he repeated, Agha Hussein, stand up and just say, I'm going to read the prayer, Qurbatan illallah. So he said that I did that and I got rid of that doubt from that time onward. So, I mean, people suffering from that, if you're suffering from the time of the prayer, just stand up and say your prayer, because God says that this is what I'm expecting you to do.
Until there is no certainty, then you have to do it.
Exactly. Some people, as I mentioned, when it comes to the major ablution or ghusl, it took them a lot of time. But God says that I accept this ghusl even if you are still consider yourself as junub or impure, but I consider you pure, which means that even if in reality you are still impure, but from my perspective, you are pure, which means that you can touch the Quran, you can read the Quran, you can do your prayers, and this is what matters. So people suffering from that should think about that. What matters? My understanding of the Islamic laws or God's explanations of the Islamic laws? So, it's a very difficult task, but in a gradual manner, when they think, they study, and they read the stories of the scholars, such people need role models as well. So I think if they read the stories, even at the time of the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt and our scholars, they can be very helpful. Let me share a very interesting narration from Imam Ali alayhi salam. We are talking about Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the faithful, just telling us how we need to consider the issue of purity or impurity. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that, are we now higher than Imam Ali alayhi salam in terms of being,
scholars
and considerate about the Islamic law?
The details, yes.
Imam says that ma abali abulun asabani aw ma un idha lam a'lam. Imam says that when I don't know if what touched me was water or urination, which is impure, of course, then I don't care. it doesn't matter for me because I do not know. So this is the commander of the faithful telling us. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that I consider it pure because I'm not sure. And I mean, this is Islam. This is the simple Islam that the Prophet and the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt have talked about. And this is a principle. This is the principle of tahara or purity. As I mentioned, everything is pure according to the religion.
Unless
Islam,
you make sure it's impure.
You make sure, that's the point. And everything is halal, is permitted, unless you make sure that it is forbidden. So this is two principles that can help the people a lot.
So they have to consider two laws. One is the fact that God does not want us to be in terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever we do, it is true unless we are sure that something is wrong with
exactly.
it.
Exactly. A person went to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam and asked him about eating cheese. He had some doubts about whether the cheese in the bazaar is permitted or not. Imam understood that this person is suffering from waswas. He gave some money to one of his servants and told him that go and buy me some cheese. And according to this narration, the servant brought the imam some cheese and imam just began to eat the cheese. So instead of telling him, imam practically told him that this is what I'm doing as your imam. But interestingly, that person, this part of the narration is very interesting. Again, it is putting emphasis on the fact that this is a very difficult problem. And us, as people who are not suffering from that, should not take it lightly. Just to expect the people to, get rid of that
yes,
all of a sudden.
Yes, when it is dyed deep in the wool, mm-hmm. there is no way to get exactly. out of it. But we have to practice.
So that person is a follower of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. He comes to Imam, he asks about eating cheese. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam himself buys the cheese and he eats the cheese. So the answer of the question is clear, but the narration says that the man repeated the question, which means that he didn't believe in, still he had some problems with eating the cheese.
It means that their problem is very deep.
Yeah. And Imam told him that, didn't you see that I'm eating the cheese? He said that, yes, but I'd like to hear it from you. You see how
just to make sure.
Just to make sure. And the Imam says that regarding cheese or any other thing, everything regarding which we have halal and haram permitted and forbidden, it is permitted for you to consume, to eat, unless you make sure that it is forbidden, it is haram. Only in that case you need to be refraining from that.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
In another narration, a person told Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that my nose is bleeding and I'm not sure whether some drops of it, dropped over my clothes or not. Imam said that before that you were sure about the purity of your clothes and now you have doubt whether it is impure or not.
Stained or not.
Then do not break your certainty with doubt. And this is a principle in Islamic jurisprudence. When you're certain about something, then you have doubt, it means that you should ignore the doubt.
You should go with the certainty.
Go with the certainty. Then the narrator of the narration asked the imam that, is it an obligation upon me to search, to look whether...
To dig deep and find a problem.
If there is a drop of blood over my body? Imam said that, of course not. There is no need for you to... search for it. So this is the reality of the religion of Islam. Islam is against being extreme in this regard and make the religion so difficult. We have the principle of tahara, purity, which, as I mentioned before, everything is pure unless you make sure that it is impure. I talked about choosing role models. I mentioned that if you're a person suffering from OCD, try to choose friends who are not suffering from the same problem.
Yes.
So if you are surrounded by the same people, they are helping you just to increase your problem.
Your problem would be magnified.
Yeah. So for all the problems, it's very important that if you are really trying to get rid of the problems, we need to be surrounded by the people who can help us. At least the people who are neutral, mm-hmm. but they are not going to increase our problem.
Who would take those magnifiers off of our eyes.
Exactly, yeah. And the next point that I would like to share is a concept that we have in Islamic spirituality, and this is the concept of muhasabatun nafs, self-account.
I guess this is the part they have problem with. When they come to account themselves for every single thing they do, they find themselves guilty.
But here, I would like to say that self-account, based on my explanation, is a cure for this problem. What is muhasabatun nafs? Imagine you're a person suffering from backbiting a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Islam says that there is a three-stages solution for that on a daily basis. These three stages are called musharata, muraqaba, and muhasaba. Musharata means early in the morning you make a condition for yourself that imagine you're backbiting the people 10 times on a daily basis. You know that you cannot get rid of that altogether.
You make a promise to yourself.
You make a promise that today I will backbite only 5 people, not 10 people.
Not 10.
Of course, if you can get rid of that all at once, it's much better. But
anyway, would be a miracle,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it would be a miracle. So this is called musharata. Early in the morning, like after morning prayer, we think that this is the problem I'm suffering from, so I make this promise between myself and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. During the day, you do muraqaba, which means you take care of your actions. Okay, I have promised God in the early morning that I will not backbite any person or more than 5 people. So during the day, you do muraqaba, and at night, before going to sleep, you do muhasaba. You think about your actions, mm-hmm. whether you were able to act upon your promise to God or not. So for the first day, it's very natural that most of the people, they have failed. This is very natural because it's been a habit for them. But the next day, on the first day, they backbite 10 people like before. But you do it the next day, the third day. At least after two weeks, you come to this conclusion that, okay, alhamdulillah, you are not back.
It's starting to work.
It's starting to work. So it's a kind of three-stages solution which can help us to get rid of many problems, mm-hmm. many sins that we are committing and we are used to them. So it's called musharata, muraqaba, and muhasaba. And to give it like a kind of guarantee, some scholars say that just to make it a firm promise, you can mention that, okay, oh God, I promise that if I backbite like more than 5 people, I will fast the following day. Mm-hmm. So it makes the muraqaba a bit more serious.
Authorized.
Because, yeah. You know that it would be a difficult task to fast the next day. Or it can be any other action. For example, I will walk for 2 kilometers. It's heavy for you. So you will take care of your action. And if you break the promise on the first day,
you have to make for it.
You need to do that because it's a kind of nadr or vow. So for the second day, you will be more cautious. So it's, to some extent, it's very practical for people mm-hmm. suffering from different kinds of problems and illnesses.
Yes, and generally, these sort of people shouldn't go into detail a lot.
Yeah.
That's a very important point for these people.
And the last point that I would like to share is that I also advise these people to consult the people who are expert in nutrition. There are a special food that can increase this problem and a special food that can help them get rid of that. Especially if you have it in the traditional so-called medications and medicine. If they refer to real experts in this mm-hmm. regard, they can give them some special types of food mm-hmm. and drinks which can help them also,
a schedule.
Yeah.
Daily schedule.
To, beside all those explanations that we make, beside going to, specialists and consulting the psychologists, the foods and the drinks
what
that we
eat
consume,
do matter.
It also matters.
So thank you. We learned a lot from you.
My
thank
pleasure.
You for today's episode. And until next session, I bid you farewell.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روباشافيت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Tensions between Russia and the West over the Ukraine war are entering a new stage as Washington and its allies in Europe continue to send military equipment to Kiev. The US's new plan to send long-range missiles to Ukraine has sparked a stark warning from Russia.
If they supply Ukraine with long-range missiles, we will draw the appropriate conclusions and use our weapons, of which we have enough, to strike targets we haven't yet hit.
Putin said Moscow is destroying U.S. weapons sent to Ukraine by the dozen. He said Russia is easily coping and targeting the shipments. Putin said the sole aim of the West supplying arms to Ukraine was to prolong the conflict for as long as possible. His warning was echoed by the Russian foreign minister. Sergei Lavrov warned the supply of advanced missile systems to Ukraine raises the risk of a third country getting dragged into the conflict.
The things that the Kyiv regime unapologetically demands from its Western patrons, firstly overstep all bounds of decency and diplomatic relations, and secondly are a direct provocation aimed at drawing the West into combat.
On Wednesday, U.S. President Joe Biden agreed to provide Ukraine with HIMARS multiple launch rocket systems as part of a $700 million weapons package.
The capabilities in this package include high mobility artillery rocket systems, or HIMARS, and guided munitions with a range of up to 70 kilometers, 5 counterartillery radars, 2 air surveillance radars, 1,000 additional javelins and 50 command launch units, 6,000 anti-armor weapons, 15,000 155-millimeter artillery rounds.
HIMARS is a mobile unit capable of simultaneously launching multiple precision-guided missiles up to 80 kilometers away. Since the start of the conflict in Ukraine, Washington has approved 11 military assistance packages for Ukraine. The biggest was last month and worth $40 billion. European countries have also followed suit. Aside from that, the United States has provided intelligence that helped Ukrainians locate and strike Russian targets. But where does the line between supporting an ally and actively participating in the conflict lie? Many believe that gray zone is getting dangerously blurred. One wrong political move and the fighting in Ukraine could quickly become a war between Russia and NATO.
Protests have erupted across the UK as thousands of British Muslims are expressing outrage at the release of a new film described as blasphemous and sectarian by critics. The film is titled The Lady of Heaven and details events surrounding the passing of Islam's Prophet Muhammad. However, the movie's narrative has provoked protests.
Community anger is on the rise across the country as protests are popping up in several cities up and down the UK, all demanding the same thing: the British cinemas abandon this controversial movie. An online petition has also been started and has gained close to 100,000 signatures in just a couple of days.
The reasons listed why Muslims dislike the film are various. Some prominent complaints include depictions of the Prophet Muhammad and his family on screen, insulting portrayals of the Prophet's wife and companions, racist casting using black actors for the bad guys, and sectarian propaganda in portraying Islam. The film's writer is also a matter of controversy. The movie is written by notorious UK-based hate preacher Yasser Habib. He has a long history of spreading offensive and insulting rhetoric against Muslims. Protesters made clear they will not stand idly by and allow a hate preacher to use a mainstream platform.
The city of Birmingham will not tolerate the disrespect of our Prophet, peace be upon him, and there will be outcomes from your actions. You will have repercussions for your actions. We have been trained from birth that we must defend the honour of our Prophet, and we will lay our life on the line.
It's upsetting to basically put a film up like that that's dividing the Muslim community.
So far, the film has been a flop. Reports suggest it has performed poorly in the US, and a counter-petition demanding support for the film accumulated a mere 2,500 signatures. However, protest leaders say they won't stop the fight until the film is dropped from all British cinemas. Robert Carter, Birmingham.
Mercenaries fighting for the Ukrainian armed forces. By their accents, it's clear they are from English-speaking countries. Indeed, there are reported to be at least hundreds of fighters from NATO countries currently on the ground in Ukraine. Some are there to teach their allies how to use the billions of dollars worth of weaponry sent over the border. Less clear are the roles of the mercenaries fighting on the front line, particularly former special forces. In the opening days of the war, three British special forces were reported feared dead by a Russian missile strike. And this is Ben Grant, former Royal Marine Commander, son of a serving Conservative British Member of Parliament. He recently posted footage of himself at the front.
As for the mercenaries, they have two roles. Some were working as instructors and some were paid to fight here. When we provided evidence, like the documents of those people killed from NATO countries, their home countries said that they were here in the status of a private person. But it sounds hard to believe when somebody is an army officer of that army, and all of a sudden, he's become a private citizen.
There's also been controversy over this man, Trevor Cadieu, a former Canadian general. He is known to have gone to Ukraine to fight, and is rumoured to be amongst those who surrendered at Azovstal. Yeah. Edward Basurin told me that he thinks the Russians have him, and are keeping it quiet as a negotiating tool. But there is no evidence of this. Cadieu's current whereabouts are still unknown.
Russia famously warned that any country which would help Ukraine in this war will face harsh consequences, and America and NATO probably don't want to push Russia's patience to the limit, but they do want to provoke Russia, they want to confuse Russia, they want to disturb Russia, they want Russia to be confused how and if to respond.
Now, it's not just high-tech weapons and trainers on the ground, it's also military intelligence that the United States is giving Ukraine in order to help them kill Russian soldiers. But where does this line lie between helping an ally and indeed becoming a co-belligerent? Indeed, that grey zone is becoming increasingly and dangerously blurred. Bruce Fain, a constitutional expert, recently said, "The United States and several NATO members have become co-belligerents with Ukraine against Russia by systematic and massive assistance to its military forces to defeat Russia. One wrong political move and the fighting in Ukraine could quickly become a war between Russia and NATO." Johnny Milik, Donetsk.
In the past
week, Kashmir witnessed two targeted killings. A non-local bank manager from the western Indian state of Rajasthan and a Kashmiri Pandit school teacher. Fear has once again gripped the troubled valley region, and local minority Hindus, known as Kashmiri Pandits, fear a repeat of the 1990s scenario. Back then, the minority group left the valley region after a series of targeted killings of high-profile officials. At that time, full-blown insurgency against Indian rule had begun in Kashmir, and the Muslim-majority population was up in arms against the Indian rule and sought independent Kashmir or a merger with Pakistan. Scores of families who had returned to Kashmir Valley after a relief and rehabilitation package was announced by the Indian Prime Minister in 2010 are once again seeking an exit from the trouble-torn valley and blame the government for faking normalcy in Kashmir.
We left in 1990 for the sake of our lives. Under the Prime Minister's package, which promised jobs and accommodation, we were lured back. But what is the fun of that job when our lives are at stake? In Kashmir, nobody is safe, and they say it's normal. We want the government to relocate us to safer places. We can't move out of our homes because of fear. Is this what you call life?
Since the abrogation of Kashmir's semi-autonomous status in August 2019, there has been a sharp rise in attacks against Kashmiri Pandits and non-locals. In Muslim-majority Kashmir, for centuries, Hindus and Muslims have lived side by side in harmony. However, the political turmoil in the region in the early 1990s forced more than 250,000 Kashmiri Hindus to flee. Kashmiri Muslims support the return of Hindus to the valley, however, oppose the idea of separate settlements being given to them.
We are Kashmiri people. To us, Hindu and Muslim make no difference. We always want them to return and stay alongside Muslims. We are secure with each other.
Since Kashmir's special status was eroded in 2019, Prime Minister Narendra Modi's BJP government has implemented new laws and policies that local Muslims say aim to change the demographics of the region.
You cannot be ruled from the center, and that too in a sensitive area like Jammu and Kashmir. This has been an utter disaster and utter failure, not today, right from the time the governor's rule has been imposed here.
Kashmir Valley is the world's largest militarized zone. Estimates say more than 500,000 Indian soldiers are stationed in the valley. After the fresh spate of violence, New Delhi has ordered reinforcement ahead of the annual Hindu pilgrimage. Suspecting more targeted attacks, security has been beefed up in and around Kashmir. Amid mounting tensions, the Indian administration has denied the relocation demand of Kashmiri Hindus. However, fearing a repeat of 1990s, many have already started to flee the region, saying their lives matter and no politicking in the name of Kashmiri Pandits. Shahana Bhatt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
More than three decades have passed, but Imam Khomeini and his ideas still touch the hearts of revolutionaries. People remember him as a symbol of anti-imperialism and anti-oppression. Imam Khomeini was a man who changed the world's perception about religion and paved the way for those who want to free themselves from the grasp of imperialism. People in the port city of Karachi have gathered in remembrance of Imam Khomeini and his ideas.
The charisma of Imam Khomeini not only inspired Iranians but had strong impact on hearts and minds of people all across the globe. That's why gatherings like these are held across the country by his lovers to show respect for the late leader.
Both Sunni and Shia scholars have stressed the need for unity among Muslims, which is one of the key teachings of Imam Khomeini.
Imam Khomeini raised the voice and the slogan that no East and no West. That is the spiritual and that is the real slogan which inspired to the nations, to other nations, especially as a Pakistani nation, we are very much inspired from this slogan and this point.
Participants also chanted anti-US and anti-Israel slogans. People emphasized the real identity of the Muslim Ummah that has been distorted and tarnished by certain enemies of Islam. They believe in the Islamic identity that Imam Khomeini has introduced to the world.
We think the way and the thoughts of Imam Khomeini must be spread all around the world between Islamic people. in order to make the Islamic countries more stronger and to, inshallah, to beat the enemies of the Islamic people around the world.
Imam Khomeini is the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, who led the 1979 revolution against the Shah. He is widely respected among Muslims for his teachings and views on freedom and unity. He is also admired for his efforts towards the Palestinian cause. Mohammad Turi, Karachi.
Following intense UN-supervised meetings between the warring sides in Yemen, the UN envoy for Yemen announced that the parties have agreed to renew the current truce in Yemen for two more months. The truce is extended under the same terms as the original agreement, which first came into effect on the 2nd of April.
When the United Nations agreed to our conditions, which included releasing the salaries of government employees, we saw that it was our duty to respond to the renewal of the truce, although we were aware that the enemy would not respect the truce as it did previously. But we adhere to peaceful solutions and we will make concessions in order to end the war.
Observers say renewing the truce is a win for the Yemenis, who stood alone during 7 years of war without any support from the international community or the United Nations.
The United Nations was absent throughout the years of war, and the armistice is not an achievement for the international body, but rather a success for Sana'a, which remained alone in facing war and siege without any support from the international community or any allies.
Grundberg said he will continue engaging with the parties to implement and consolidate all elements of the truce.
People, he hoped that renewing the UN brokered truce will build for a comprehensive political solution to end the war that devastated their lives and country. They say the international community should now step in properly to support the political process in Yemen. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana'a.
France's government has warned, don't expect inflation to return to normal until the end of 2023. At nearly 6%, French inflation is the highest since 1985, and the government says the peak won't even be reached until this winter. It's a stunningly serious diagnosis. Inflation has seemingly been the number one voter complaint since the euro currency was introduced in 1999, and now it's worse than ever. Many are pointing the finger at the pan-European project, with Brussels demanding austerity and forcing Paris to ignore mass protests and public opinion.
This inflation is a symptom of the profound crisis caused by the policies of neoliberalism put in place since the 1980s. Above all, the policies seek merely to enrich stockholders and create constant dividends. This inflation is going to last, and the government is only making a wild guess that it will end by 2024.
Across the EU, only Malta has managed to keep inflation lower. France has been saved by its constantly derided socialist-inspired measures, such as caps on energy prices. However, many are demanding more price caps, re-indexed pensions, immediate bonuses, higher wages across the board, and especially for low-wage workers, in order to keep inflation from making the poverty rate skyrocket.
All the countries of the European Union are basically already in a recession. The 2008 financial crisis was followed by a forced era of austerity, which created a structural lack of demand and investment in Europe. Making massive public investments with efforts to an ecological transition would create both jobs and demand for goods and possibly avoid another Great Depression.
80% of France says they're watching their expenses more carefully, which seems likely to push France's consumer-driven economy officially into a recession next quarter. 70% are distrustful of their economic future, which is record pessimism so soon after a presidential election. After all the austerity, the French are being told to expect nearly 2 years of widespread economic hardship. That may not only affect this month's legislative elections, but it could lead to major social unrest yet again. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
150 foreign ambassadors and officials have visited Tehran to take part in the 33rd anniversary of the passing away of a man who changed the course of history in Iran, Imam Khomeini. Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini was the founder of the Islamic Republic and the former leader of the 1979 Islamic Revolution, which put an end to centuries of autocracy in Iran. Here, people believe the scale of Imam Khomeini's impact transcends Iran's boundaries.
The Islamic Revolution of Iran has proved to the Nigerian populace that if you are determined to eliminate any unjust leader and you follow the course, you can reach a result. In some of the curriculum of the higher education in Nigeria, there are some space being open for Imam Khomeini to talk about the Imam Khomeini and the revolution of Islamic Republic in Nigeria curriculum of education.
Thanks to Imam Khomeini, we have witnessed a freedom-seeking movement forming in Muslim and even non-Muslim nations, which challenges imperialism and encourages dignity and independence from the global arrogance. This is the miracle of the Islamic Revolution.
Imam Khomeini passed away in 1989 at the age of 86, almost a decade after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, which saw the overthrow of the U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime in Iran, headed by Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, known as the Shah. Imam Khomeini spent many years in exile in Iraq, Turkey, and France, from where he led a swelling grassroots movement, which ultimately ousted the Shah and led to the formation of the Islamic Republic.
For us, Imam Khomeini is a role model of resilience in the face of injustice. Today, we have come to renew our allegiance with him and the lessons that he taught us about self-reliance and resistance against the bullies of the world.
Imam Khomeini established the Islamic Republic following a referendum held in 1979, when, based on official reports, more than 98% of eligible voters voted yes to the Islamic Republic.
Imam Khomeini is remembered here as the pioneer of a new era in Iran's history, an era that put centuries of monarchy behind and upended the Shah's domestic and foreign policies, replacing them with a political system that tries to rule the country based on the motto of independence from the West. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
In the limelight.
The number of cases of Israeli regime's use of human shields recorded by human rights groups, both international and domestic, is ever growing. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Robert Inglakesh, political analyst, in an article published under the heading, Israeli regime is once again using Palestinians as human shields. Here's the story. On May 13th, a 16-year-old Palestinian girl named Ahed Mohammed Reza Mereb was left traumatized after being used by Israeli regime troops as a human shield, according to a report from Defense for Children International Palestine, DCIP. Mereb said that during the incident, which took place during an Israeli regime raid in the Al-Hadaf neighborhood of Jenin, one of them, meaning Israeli troops, ordered me in Arabic through a small window in the military vehicle, "Stay where you are and don't move. You are a terrorist. Stand in your place until you say goodbye to your brother." She added, "I was trembling and crying and shouting to the soldiers to remove me because the bullets were passing over my head." A week later, the Zionist regime forces were again accused of the same tactics after a photograph appeared to show them using a Palestinian man as a human shield. As shocking as these reports are, they come as little surprise to most Palestinians who know, along with those paying attention long enough, that taking Palestinian human shields used to be common practice in the Israeli regime military. According to B'Tselem, Israel's top human rights organization, the Israeli regime military has used the human shields tactic since it occupied the West Bank, East Al-Quds, and the Gaza Strip in 1967. The Zionist regime troops that have employed such strategies on the battlefield under what is known as Israel's infamous neighbor procedure, a friendly way of saying the Israeli military's human shield procedure. Up until 2005, the use of Palestinians as human shields by the Zionist regime troops had been a standard military practice for the Israeli regime army, legal under Israeli regime law. The Zionist regime's high court only banned the practice following a three-year legal battle brought by seven Israeli and Palestinian human rights groups who argued that it violated the Geneva Conventions. Just months after the challenge was launched in May 2002, 19-year-old Palestinian Nadal Abu Makan was killed while being used as a human shield. The death of Makan, which was concluded by rights groups to have been Israeli regime's fault, gave the case against the Zionist regime's human shield policy the push it needed. When the Zionist regime did eventually outlaw the practice, the Israeli regime army protested. In fact, the then Israeli war minister, Shaul Mufaz, appeared in court to present arguments to repeal the ban. The Zionist regime's war ministry specifically argued the case for practicing this policy inside occupied West Bank, despite it having been ruled a violation of international law. Since the use of Palestinian human shields has been outlawed, the Israeli regime military has attempted to place the ruling under review several times, arguing that it provides essential protection to their troops. While the Zionist regime's military routinely accuses resistance groups of using human shields in Gaza, it simultaneously uses the tactic itself and even argues for it to be legalized again. Former Israeli troops, speaking to Israeli group Breaking the Silence, have testified to having used Palestinian human shields after the practice was outlawed. Despite copious evidence that the Zionist regime forces have continued to use Palestinians as human shields since the practice was banned, very few Israeli regime troops have ever been brought to justice for their actions. The last time Israeli troops were punished for using a Palestinian as a human shield was in 2010 for an act committed during the Zionist regime's incursion into Gaza in 2008 to 2009. B'Tselem summed up the charges as follows. The two troops in question had ordered a 9-year-old boy at gunpoint to open a bag they suspected was booby-trapped. Despite the gravity of their conduct, putting a young child at risk, the two were given a 3-month conditional sentence and demoted from staff sergeant to private some 2 years after the incident took place. None of their commanding officers were tried. The number of cases of the Zionist regime's use of human shields recorded by human rights groups, both international and domestic, is ever growing. To see this emerge again, especially in the wake of the killing of Palestinian-American journalist Shirin Abu Aghla, should be a turning point, educating the wider world about who is truly using human shields. No reputable international bodies or organizations have reported a pattern of Palestinians using their own people as human shields. But The Zionist regime military quite literally enshrined the tactic into their manuals for decades, and Israeli regime troops now continue to engage in these acts even after they were legally outlawed.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear youth, welcome to your own station. Hope you're fine and your life is moving smoothly. Well, the demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini is in 14th Khordad.
We can say 4th June.
Yes. Today we have devoted this episode to him, who is the founder of Islamic Revolution and the man who shall never be forgotten from the memory of world's history. With all the great changes that happened in the conscience of the world, there is no doubt that such a leader, such a great man, would be a matter of curiosity for everyone all around the world.
Exactly.
So we want to talk more about him, and also we want the youth all around the world to open their eyes and see the truth behind this man. But I think still there might be some people who are not aware of the truth behind this man. The propagandas are always working, and they use their power and technologies to hide the truth.
On that note, people, if they don't know about this person, at least everyone in every corner of the world, at least every literate person knows that this was the man behind the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And then if you say that there might be some people who do not know about Imam, might be the actual history or biography about the Imam. Because Imam has been so influential that Western, what our leaders say, what our supreme leaders say, all arrogant powers have come together to start writing one or the way against this figure. So we'll try to tell through our program who Imam has been.
Exactly. And what we're going to say is just like a touch on an ocean. So it's not going to be the whole fact. Such a great man cannot be summarized in only one episode.
Of course.
Now, Zainab, what always attracts me when I go through the biography of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, is what a simple man he was, and at the same time, how knowledgeable he was.
Yes.
And with all his knowledge and honor, he comes to be so simple and so easy with his family, with the people who visited him.
Yes.
It is very interesting, you know. Such a thing is very rare.
I think we should be touching upon the points, what you were touched by and what I was touched by.
Exactly, yes.
Life.
Well, personally, I would say all parts of him are very interesting.
Exactly.
But what attracts me more is that he was a man of a family.
Wow.
He had such a great relationship with every single member of his family, even the kiddos, you know?
Yes.
It's unbelievable. Such a man with that much of responsibilities. His words shakes the world.
Yeah.
Then such a man talks to children like as if he's a kid, or talks to the youngsters as if he's a young person, knowing all their emotions and their needs, every single thing.
Yeah, you know when Imam was in Beirut and he's writing letter to his
exactly wife, that letter is very interesting.
You just
that
reminded
love
me
letter.
Of that. Yeah, the love letter. You cannot expect love letter coming
exactly
in from Imam
yes.
because the world has depicted Imam as a way like he might be some strict religious scholar mm-hmm. who may not be like much.
That was what I told you.
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
expect him to be like.
Like
this.
The letter starts with I offer myself as a sacrifice. May I get sacrificed to you for
yes.
you. My dear, like during this period that I'm suffering to the separation of dear glory's eyes and my heart's strength, I remember you and your beautiful face.
Mm-hmm.
That's so romantic.
So romantic. Such a scholar, such a religious scholar. You
no,
don't
because
expect
the West
him.
Has depicted religious personalities as
exactly.
non-romantic.
Yes, yes.
They are.
Yes.
They cannot be romantic at all. They mm-hmm. are strict. They are tough.
So
but
serious.
But see, Imam is saying, may I get sacrificed for you?
And he
I remember
says,
your beautiful face,
look,
your eyes.
And he actually mentions that in his letter. He says that looking at the shore is not so interesting for me because you're not
you're
here
not
with
along
me.
With
yes.
me. You're
not
along
with me.
I'm seeing the landscape.
I don't
I'm
enjoy it
seas.
All alone.
I don't enjoy it alone. That's so...
So touching. So,
so touching.
Romantic.
Exactly.
And so nice.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to Youth Station. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. Today we have devoted this episode to the founder of Islamic Revolution and the man who shall never be forgotten from the memory of world's history.
Oh, well, he has always been asking about his children from all these letters that he has been sending to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And since we are like, we touched upon the family life, I remember one of the things that his wife used to say, like when interviewed, she said like, Imam would provide me best of the places in my room to sleep.
Exactly, yes.
And then when he wanted to wake up for the night prayers, he would just wake up slowly.
He didn't make any noise.
He didn't make any noise,
yes.
exactly. And he just didn't...
In order not to make anyone irritable.
He didn't even switch on the lights mm-hmm. to offer the prayers. He just went in. And when he was about to offer, like he was... about to go through the evolution, he wanted to make wazu. What happened was like he used to put sponge.
Exactly, yes.
In order to make
how
less
how sensitive
noise.
He was.
How much caring he has been towards
yes,
his family.
So
like he's
caring,
also taking
sensitive.
Care of Allah. He's also going through the like, you know, he's at the same time taking care of his family. And at the same time, he is just... going to talk to his Allah.
Exactly.
That's
and
so
this
touching.
Romantic, caring, sensitive man that we're already talking about has made some great theories in religious topics.
Exactly.
You know,
and
it's
what,
unbelievable.
Yes. And what was more unbelievable was that he writes books when he was just 27.
Books that made so much of changes.
Yeah. What was the best dimension of Imam's life was that he was multidimensional.
Exactly.
No, he didn't just read one book. He didn't just, for example, if you study today, you're studying literature,
mm-hmm.
Asma. I went through science for some time and then I went to
yes, exactly.
linguistics.
We can
but
do one thing.
We can do one thing at one time. But you know, Imam is doing, he's doing literature.
He has given everything enough of
he's
time.
He's doing philosophy. He's doing history. He's
yeah,
doing
philosophy.
Kalam. He's doing beliefs. And he is doing so much stuff. He's a
And moreover, he has made a revolution all alone with no one to help him.
He went on his back.
Just his people on his side. That's
yeah.
it. He did not have anything on his hand.
But where did you think he got this nerve from?
I guess it's a thing that comes from Allah.
Yes.
The relationship you create with Allah gives you the strength and gives you the ability to be able to do all of those things, all of those great deeds
yeah.
that are going to be eminent in the history.
Yes, I think the upbringing part mm-hmm. also plays a very great role as...
Yes, he was from a family who were already
Yes, he has been inspired
by his father, of course.
Exactly, who was a fearless person who stood up against the oppression.
That is an important point, yes.
That's an important point.
His father was also...
If I see my parents standing against oppression, I can never ever in my life accept oppression. Which is which needs efforts, which needs a great effort.
I mean, of course.
So many parents are scared that our child will get into some trouble tomorrow. So we must not stand. Like, why should we stand against oppression?
No, but his family has nurtured him in a way to make
in
him brave
way, yeah.
and so strong.
And his religious, I think, whatever, how much the way he has flourished in the religious dimension, the credit goes to his Imam Khomeini's aunt, the sister of his father, who just pushed him into the studying Quran and everything. Then she guided him, telling him the stories and all.
So she was a driving force for him.
Yeah, in terms of the religious studies, yes.
Yes.
And his mother as well has been...
And you know, Zainab, as an outsider, when you look at his story, it is very much unbelievable. A strange case, because you know what he did in the history was not a simple thing.
One of the most important things that I would like to tell the mothers of today is that when gone through the history, when gone through the interviews, when gone through everything, we have got to know such leaders have not come into existence without like making efforts. His mother has never breastfed him without wuzu.
Exactly. Evolution. Yeah.
Without evolution. So this
so from
has
such
effect.
A mother comes such a boy.
Exactly. So it's not like the boy has made efforts throughout
his
life.
We always say that Rome has not been built over one night.
Yes.
So
yes,
it takes a lot of effort.
It's so hard.
I
try to do that for myself. It's so hard that your baby needs to be fed after
Besides
every 20 minutes.
Besides all your
minutes.
Responsibilities, you have to take care of this evolution every time you're going to feed your child.
You are going to feed your... When you have a baby, you have to feed your baby after every 20 minutes.
Yes.
And it's not really an easy job to go and offer, like, you know, to go for evolution after every 20 minutes
so
and to feed your baby.
So he had... A very great family.
Yes.
In the case that they were so religious, and at the same time they had a connection to God, and these religious studies were important for them.
He lost his father at a very young age. I guess he was 5 months old.
And I was going to mention that.
Yes.
Also, himself had worked on himself a lot. He has done so much of effort, so much of, you know, the process of growing takes a lot from you. It's not an easy process.
Yes.
You have to go through too much.
Yes.
Of soul-searching stories and...
So many things, Asma.
So many things.
So many things. For example, we had the seminary studies this term online because of the COVID stuff. But I told him, I cannot do it. I really cannot do it. I'm sorry. I want some holiday because I was inspired by Imam in this case. He was supposed to go to Isfahan to do the seminary studies, but he prefers to go to Iraq, which was in that time one of the best
seminaries
in Iran.
Schools, yes.
So he's not lagging behind. I getting inspired by Imam. Contacted, I just mailed my faculty and I told them that I cannot do this stuff online. I need to be in class. Mm-hmm. I want to learn from the boards. I want to learn from the teacher in front of my eyes. I want to learn each and everything in a very detailed manner, not in like, you know, just...
Exactly. Not just something you do it and it finishes and that's it. No, you have to go through the depth and core of every single thing you do.
Because this leader has been going through like that.
Exactly. So as you mentioned, he has got many dimensions to his character. Also, another thing which was interesting for me, we said that he was sensitive, he was so caring, a family man, and also he was a religious scholar. And at the same time, he cared about different parts of society. I mean, he talked to youth, he addresses them a lot. He actually says, these are the soldiers that are going to come in future. These are my power. And also, he has this very interesting meeting with the athletes. he's also interested in his sport. Wow. And he says that I like that as well.
I think he's interested in each and every dimension of
exactly.
life.
And he has something to say in each part.
So I tell my audience again that he has not been a strict, tough, mm-hmm. religious man. He has been a man of family.
Exactly.
He has been a mystic when it comes
everything
to religion.
Everything at the same time. So
everything at the same
Zainab,
time.
We're running out of time and the story is still at the very beginning, but we have to cut it right here. For more information for the audience who want to know more about Imam Khomeini, I would recommend you to go and check some other stuffs and books online to get to know more about him. So thank you for listening.
Yes, and in case you want to go back and listen again to this session, you can go to our official website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam,
mm-hmm.
and you'll find an archive of all the programs broadcasting from...